Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you this evening?
I can't complain, Don. I could be the commissioner of the NFL. I'd really have a problem. But real good, Don. Just came from a meeting at the headquarters of the Park Board, meeting on diversity in the Minneapolis Police Department. That should bring some chuckles to our guests. But anyways, hey, it's one of those things. Been a beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. And
yes, it has.
Let's have four or five more of them because we'll probably need them.
Yes.
But let's get on with it. First of all, I want to welcome the Sheriff of Hennepin County, the Honorable Richard Stanek, Chief Sheriff Richard Stanek. Longtime friend. I mean, I'll just indicate that right up front. Known him for a long, long time, and even knew some of his folks and over there in Northeast Minneapolis and et cetera. But anyways, it's our pleasure to have him with us tonight. We wanted to bring some balance, if you will. There is a campaign going on for sheriff in Hennepin County, and, of course, Sheriff Stanek is the incumbent. There are a couple challenges. We will, ask him a couple questions about the challenges, but primarily we will ask him the kind of questions that you asked of a candidate.
Yes, exactly.
What will he continue to bring to the table, and what is his relationship with the community that we're primarily concerned about, and that is the African-American community, and then by a broader scope, Hennepin County. And by the way, the sheriff has a rich history in law enforcement. It's not situation where he just decided to run one day. He has been he is a captain in the Minneapolis Police Department, even though they got rid of that rank. Former head of the Criminal Investigation Division. He is a former commissioner of public safety, as well as of course he has been involved very much in politics, because for a number of years he was a state senator representing that western part of Hennepin County. Sheriff Stanek, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on tonight. Looking forward to it.
Welcome.
All right. To give us a little background on Richard Stanek, and, if you would, starting with how long you've been our sheriff, if you will, here in Hennepin County, and why it is that the voters would want to return you to what would be a third term?
Right. Well, that's a great question. First off, as you know, Ron and Don, I'm a lifelong resident of Hennepin County. Mm-hmm. My wife and my two kids live out in the northwestern part of the county now. We're born and raised in Minneapolis. This is my 31st year in policing. You rightfully so got my career right. I was a Minneapolis police officer for 20 years. I'm leave now to serve as the elected sheriff, also the commissioner of public safety and director of Homeland Security. I'm seeking my third term as sheriff of the county. I got elected in 2006. I got reelected in 2010, and I'm seeking reelection in 2014 because I don't think the job is done.
Okay. Give us a breakdown on your complement and what it is that, we already know, but we have a domestic and international audience. What, under Minnesota law, does the sheriff's department do?
Sure. Well, under Minnesota State Law, Chapter 387, it articulates seven distinct duties of the elected county sheriff. As you know, the county sheriff works directly for the residents of the county, but we don't work for a mayor or a city council or a county board of commissioners. We're rather for the residents themselves, so they have some relief in that process. Out of those seven lines of business, we actually provide eight of them, and our budget comes from the property tax dollars by the citizens of Hennepin County, both residential and business. We do all the way from 911 patrol response, 911 dispatching, internationally accredited crime lab, operated jail, courts, warrants, civil process, a lot of stuff.
All right. In some states and in some counties, And I think this is a very important point, Sheriff, my colleague, Mr. Allen. You are responsible to the voters, as you said before. You're not responsible to the county executive, as it is in some counties. You're not responsible to the county board. You do have to make a budget presentation to them. Is that correct?
That's correct, but that's really a unique relationship that so often the voters miss. So, in other words, when you have a grievance and you can't get it addressed on the local level, if there's a local police department in place, many times they'll come to the county sheriff and say, look, I've got this issue. How can I help? We work with all 36 other local law enforcement agencies across my county and the 1.2 million residents to provide that professional full-service level of law enforcement.
Okay. And let me be concise, because this is an election, if you will. You are standing for a third term. The county board cannot dictate to you what kind of excuse the reference, what kind of political situation. Let me give you an example. Let's say that in one of the county commissioner's district, there's been some problems, maybe between the county commissioner and the chief in that location, and maybe at some point the sheriff's department is asked to assist in some element of law enforcement. The county commissioner cannot interfere with your statutory duty to reach out and work with that one of those 36 jurisdictions. Am I correct?
You are correct, neither on the local level nor on the federal law enforcement level. So, again, we work directly for the residents of the county. But, you know, state law is also sort of a mandate that dictates that we work well together and provide seamless public safety services to our residents. So residents of Minneapolis are also residents of Hennepin County, and thereby, you know, I also stand for election by them as well as the other 45 cities across our county.
All right. Now, in that context, if you will, the sheriff, if you will, in some places they call him the high sheriff, if you will. In fact, I think that terminology came from good old Mary England, really during the days of Robin Hood. but you, as the sheriff, also have the authorization and authority to patrol the city of Minneapolis, if you so desire, and there have been a couple of cases where the sheriff's department has done that, let's say, in the last 15 years.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You know, we quite often supplement patrol services across the county because we have jurisdiction in all of the cities. So just in the last summer, we provided deputies serving in downtown Minneapolis in what we call safe zones, walking the beat. We provided deputies in North Minneapolis on patrol when they had a spate of violence and shootings. Our deputies worked countywide, but also across the city of Minneapolis.
Explain to our listeners a little bit about the sheriff's responsibilities to the judiciary system, your relationship to the court.
Right. So the sheriff also works for the courts. And, as you know, orders of the court issued by a judge are just mandates by the court, and the sheriff's responsibility is to carry out those orders of the court. So then sometimes we do things that are maybe less desirable by the public, like civil foreclosures of property, or restraining orders, or orders for protection, or serving warrants and taking somebody into custody. We only do so by order of the court, and I don't get a choice to say, hey, I'm sorry, Judge, but you erred on this one. My job is to, under state law, to serve the orders of the court and then figure this out.
Okay, all right. Now, Hennepin County, as well as Ramsey County, if I'm not mistaken, has a long history of having incumbents serve for a long period of time. I came up when Ryan was the sheriff. That's even before your time, Sheriff. You were just a toddler. And I think that Ryan served as sheriff for almost 40 years, and then we had Olmont and McGowan and yourself and others. So it is a position in which you have to maintain the trust of the citizens, and in return, they will reward you with continued incumbency because you're doing a good job. Would that be a proper way to say it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. In fact, Ron, you're absolutely right. The last three sheriffs of Hennepin County, number 24, 25, and 26, because I'm the 27th, have served 70 years across the county. Sheriff Ed Ryan, Sheriff Don Oman, who I had a chance to visit with the other day, and Sheriff Patrick McGowan, who I just spoke to yesterday as well.
Okay.
Now, these guys had a long, distinguished career. The the strength of that is the longevity. Now, I've seen and I've worked with now 3 Minneapolis police chiefs in my 7 years as the county sheriff. Most likely, if elected to another term here in November, I will probably end up working with maybe a 4th or a 5th Minneapolis police chief or other chiefs across our county.
Okay, so people need to keep that in mind because that has all the world to do with stability. Talk to us a little bit, Sheriff, about the composition of your department. And you know, we're moving towards taking a look at some allegations or statements and references that have been made by at least one of your opponents that you've not done anything in the area of diversity. So first of all, could you give us a breakdown? What is your actual complement of authorized personnel, both sworn and unsworn or unlicensed?
Sure. Well, we have approximately 800 full-time employees and 300-plus volunteers and special deputies who don't receive compensation for the work that they do. They're volunteers.
Oh,
but out
okay.
of those 800, about 350 of them are sworn deputies. Another 200 or so are detention deputies who work in the correctional setting. So about 500 to 550 deputies. Some are sworn and carry firearms. Others only work in the detention facility. Our diversity, Ron, and this is one of those things where, you know, you got to look at the numbers. When I came in as sheriff 7 years ago, our diversity in the agency was sitting at about 7.2%. Not real good. We went to work on this. We have brought it up to 9.4%. We've been a little higher at times. We're facing a lot of attrition and retirements now, as all the law enforcement agencies across my state are. We could do better, and we strive to do better. But the fact of the matter is, when my opponent says, hey, you know, you're not diverse, you haven't done anything, it's absolutely not true. You look at our promoted ranks, sergeants and lieutenants, captains, even one of my upper command staff, a major, African-American, Latino, Asian, Hmong. It's important. A lot of them are females.
Okay, all right then. I know that there's, let me just get to that because you said females, and I know that your opponent raised the question about a high-ranking African-American female by the name of June Johnson. Is that correct?
Right. She was a lieutenant who worked for the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office and recently separated service.
Gotcha. Okay. But that particular matter was reviewed by you, and it was her decision to move on. Is that correct?
Correct. There was a number of due process associated with that, and at the end of the day, she chose to leave service with the Sheriff's Office. She was a very accomplished young woman. She did a phenomenal job for us. We were sorry to see her go, but we also understand her life decisions.
Okay. Now, what if any, you spoke just a couple minutes ago about, you know, your percentages and your numbers, which seem to be actually a little bit better than the Minneapolis Police Department, but I don't want to get into that, be unfair, because we don't have the mayor or the chief or anybody currently attached to that place. But what are your goals, and how successful has your recruitment tools been?
Sure. Well, I'll just give you an example. This coming Saturday, we'll be up at Camp Ripley, which is a military installation in the northern part of our state. And we'll be talking with soldiers from a couple different companies and brigades who are looking for life-changing careers as they exit the military. We want those people. We want folks with career experience, life experiences, military or otherwise, to join our ranks. Now, that's one. But two, if you ask me, well, what are we going to do? Look, I got into this, Ron, because you know it. I saw you almost every night, unfortunately, way too many times, out of the scene of a murder, a rape, a robbery, some type of assault, a drive-by shooting. I was tired of seeing violent crime skyrocket in our community, primarily in the inner city, and I decided that the sheriff's office needed to play a significant role. We have done that. We have reduced violent crime across this county by 36%. That's a huge number. Rape, robbery, murder, aggravated assault, down by 36%.
Okay. Going back a little bit into some of the current situation, I know this is a very sensitive question, but you are, I mean, I have to say it, you are highly respected in the area of Homeland Security. As you pointed out at the top of this program, you have actual administrative responsibility and experience in Homeland Security, as well as you were Commissioner of Public Safety, et cetera. Some of us in the African-American community are beginning to become a little nervous with regards to this whole situation in the Middle East and the fact that, unfortunately, the Twin Cities has been the epicenter of recruitment, if you will, turning people into foreign fighters, sending them overseas primarily to Somalia, certainly now to Iraq and Syria and et cetera. Is there any concern that we in the African-American community, particularly in light of the directive given by the Attorney General yesterday, Eric Holder, man who I have great respect for, but at the same time he indicated that the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul is going to clear to be one of the places that is going to be targeted as it pertains to the recruitment of fighters and et cetera. Can you give us some guidance? Because really the debate has not, quote-unquote, started because too far too many people, Mr. Allen, be advised, are really not aware of how swiftly this thing is moving. I watched earlier today the debate before the Senate Armed Forces Committee, you know, folks talking in terms of boots on the ground, et cetera. But my concern as an African-American and a civil rights activist is that we don't run into a lot of confusion and mistakes about who's the loyalist of us all, if you know what I mean. So is there some observations that you can make for us, and is there a need for a dialogue prior to the special projects getting started?
Yeah, well, absolutely, Ron and Don, you are right on track. The problem is most folks won't talk about this. Most folks in positions like mine won't acknowledge that we have some concerns here, right back here in the Twin Cities, with young men who are leaving and going overseas, being radicalized and then fighting in the jihad, the holy war. It is a problem. We should not ignore it, but rather we should work with our communities as we do it through a community engagement team. This happened to us back in 2007, 2008, 2009, and now it's happening again. And I think we need to discuss it, and that's why you, as a civil rights activist, have always been very straightforward in putting the question on the table.
Now, obviously, that is what we have certainly done tonight. Another issue that there has not been the kind of discussion, I think there are some, and I won't go into great details because, you know, I don't want to make it sound like this is a love affair kind of thing and et cetera, but the facts are the facts. We have a problem with the flow of heroin. And there have been a couple conferences here, high-powered, very high-powered. In fact, my good friend Chuck Wechsler came here a couple weeks ago. They had a high-powered meeting and et cetera. And there was only one African-American invited other than Commander Eric Dondo, who was, of course, a backbencher. Dr. Vincent Hayden was the only African-American. Is this something we should be concerned about in the African-American community, in that our folks unfortunately and regrettably overdose
unfortunately
are attached to the heroin? I mean, is there something that we need to do about this, Sheriff?
Well, I think that's one of the tragedies overall. You know, I had invited Dr. Hayden to participate in that forum with us, and he's a good guy. He comes from the community. He understands the treatment perspective. Secondly, though, too many young people are dying from heroin overdose, opiate overdose. Okay. Last year in Anapa County, we had 56 people die. You know, that's compared to just a few years ago when we had 6, 7, or 8 of them die. The numbers are staggering and continue to increase, and we have to do something as parents and moms and dads and good citizens from the community to turn this around.
Now, talk to us a tad as the elected sheriff, but a candidate. There was a pretty high-powered meeting earlier in the year. I think it was out around the Rogers area because there had been a couple of ODs out there of high school students and et cetera. And that community was pretty upset and et cetera. But I'm also aware that in the course of the meeting chaired by Chuck Wechsler, as I understand it, many of the law enforcement individuals who were there, sheriffs, chiefs, et cetera, said that there is an enormous problem with Minneapolis as, quote-unquote, a pipeline, if you will, for the heroin projects and problems. And I was troubled by that because I can well remember when you were commander of the CID, Criminal Investigation Division, I can remember the kind of controversy that came up, and I know there were some of you who were definitely concerned. But I don't know that people don't know that, unfortunately, and this is a question we're going to ask your opponent, if you will, Mr. Frizzell, next week. I've never been able to understand why we no longer have a narcotics unit in the Minneapolis Police Department. Could you kind of help me with that?
Well, that's a great question. When I was commander of criminal investigations for the city for almost 10 years, we had a very strong narcotics enforcement unit and did a great job trying to curtail the sale of these poisons to our kids in the community and in school. Now, my opponent is a deputy chief with Minneapolis. He's a number three in command. You should ask him that very question. Why don't they have this? What are they doing? Where are they when it comes to sitting at the table with us and having this candid, frank discussion? We've had two town hall meetings in North Minneapolis. Both were attended very, very, very lightly by Minneapolis police. It's unfortunate because the community members who were there are Minneapolis residents, and they want to know.
Okay. Mr. Alvin, do you have any questions? And because we don't want to take up all of Sheriff Stanek's time, but I think we've had a pretty good exchange. But let me reach back to my colleague, Mr. Alvin. Any questions that you may have at this point, Mr.
Alvin? In support of Sheriff Stanek, I would just like to let people know that tomorrow there's a heroin town hall meeting. It's Thursday, September 18th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Plymouth Creek Community Center. That's 14800 34th Avenue North. It's young adults, parents, educators, and concerned citizens are invited. So that's wide open. That's with Hennepin County and the Plymouth Police Department. Just wanted to put that out there.
Oh, right. Okay, so the address that you've given us is in the municipality of Plymouth, Minnesota, correct?
Yes, sir. 14800 34th Avenue at the Plymouth Creek Community Center, starting at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow.
Okay, all right. Sheriff Stanek, is there anything that you wish to say that maybe we did not touch on during this interview and discussion with you? And, of course, clearly identifying you as an incumbent, if you will, seeking a third term. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you feel is relevant and important?
You know, I think, guys, that you've done a very nice job. Again, we've got a long, rich history of working together on issues that matter to the residents of this great county. It is not easy day in and day out, but we do things for the right reason. Sometimes you take the bricks with the bricks. I'll take a few bricks once in a while, but we always do it for the right reason. Violent crime reduction by 36%, engaging the communities of color is important. Diversifying our ranks of the men and women who serve the residents of this county is just as important, if not more so. And we've been doing a pretty dang good job of it, and we're going to continue to strive for more.
All right, then. Sheriff Stanek, we appreciate you giving us this time. By the way, for those that are challengers, they will all be given equal time, correct, Mr. Alvin? And approximately about 24 and a half minutes we spent interviewing, talking with Sheriff Stanek. And so particularly to candidate Frizzell, who I've known for quite some time, you will be allowed the same amount of time. Equal time is the order of the day. Sheriff, want to thank you and of course, wish you the best.
Hey, guys, thank you very much. Stay safe out there.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Goodbye, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Mr. Allen, after all those shootings yesterday in North Minneapolis, I appreciate the sheriff's comment. Stay safe out there. Boy, you know, being in the inner city of Minneapolis right now is not the most comfortable thing in the world. We had three shot yesterday, including one 17-year-old young African-American. I think you posted that on your independent news network, if you will.
Yeah. Yep.
17-year-old African-American gunned down just feet away from the parking lot of the school district's headquarters there at 1250 West Broadway, if you will. Building was, in fact, locked down. There was tremendous fear in the building, if you will. We hope that the perpetrators are apprehended and some peace and comfort, by the way, is provided to the mother and loved ones of the deceased, as well as the young man who is still hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries, if you will. I mean, we just have to say it. I know I don't like to have to say it. I mean, we like to be able to talk like some of our leaders do when they, you know, go to tell folks what a heck of a job they're doing and ask for some more money. Oops. But can't do that. You know, not a good conscience. It's not going to work. So anyways, we spent some time with the current incumbent sheriff seeking a third term. And as we said, Mr. Allen, and Mr. Allen insists upon this, and I insist upon it, that if Mr. Frizzell is able to get back with us and et cetera, he will be given similar equal time on this program. Okay?
Absolutely. And Mr. Edwards, that brings us to I was in contact with candidate Frizzell, and hopefully we will connect because I have all the contact information now, and he will have him on next week. So we're looking good for that.
Okay, well, you know, man, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. By the way, we are obligated to contact any of the so-called lesser candidates who are running against Sheriff Stanek, and our policy here is to offer them equal time. We're not going to deal with them like we see the big Democratic and Republican parties deal with the lesser parties, be it the Libertarians or the Green Party or et cetera. So
mm-hmm.
equal time will be set aside, and if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, we have about a month and a half before the election, correct? Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All
yes,
right.
sir.
Well, we'd be remiss. My text has been going off. Don, let me ask you this question. See, I do this to my associate because he's really not a sports enthusiast. What the heck is going to happen with respect to this Adrian Peterson and then in Baltimore, the Ray Rice situation? Give me your observations, Don.
Well, okay, let's start with Peterson, Adrian Peterson. You know I don't follow sports, but I've been following this because I've been looking at it from the point of view from the media and the reports that they have been doing on Adrian Peterson, especially Fox 9 here locally in WCCO. What I'm finding, Mr. what I'm watching is a trend where Fox 9 on Tuesday night had four different Caucasian men talking about Adrian Peterson and how bad it was that he disciplined his kids. There was no experts. There were no African-Americans. Okay, let's put it like this. When I was a kid, I was spanked a certain way. I might have had whips on me. There's things that happen in different cultures, and that doesn't mean that Adrian Peterson didn't love his kid. But here goes a multimillionaire NFL pro athlete who's black, who's having kids with white women. That is really, you know, people say, I'm never going to watch the Vikings again if he plays. I'm never going to do this. And mostly, you know, these are people that don't understand they have white privilege, and they're not looking into the whole chasm of what's going on. So with this thing, I've seen a nice, ugly media blitz against a black man who, you know, obviously in today's time and age that, you know, they're not going to zero tolerance for that kind of spanking of a child. But then again, I think there's some hidden information that we have not received about who reported it, where it was reported at, and how it got to a grand jury when the first time it went to the grand jury, it didn't go anywhere. Who pushed it?
That's what's being alleged, and the county attorney down there in Texas has not refuted that. That the first time around, when this matter, as Mr. Allen just stated, was brought to a sitting grand jury, the grand jury declined to indict Mr. Peterson. They waited until the next cycle. They got a new grand jury in, and I think that it's interesting that some of that timing had to do with the situation with Ray Rice,
mm-hmm.
the suspended indefinitely running back for the Baltimore Ravens, if you will. That has become quite an interesting, quote-unquote, public discussion and debate. You know, I take the position, and we do this on this program with Ronnie and Donnie, is that with the things that we have, and I have to say I appreciate the candor and the honestness of the sheriff in confirming, because most times if we'd have had some leaders on, they would have said we didn't know what we were talking about, both about mm-hmm. the foreign fighters and also about the heroin problem. Oops. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I'm looking at this situation, particularly with Adrian. You know, I initially on one of my programs praised the Wilfs, Ziggy and his brother Mark. I guess I understand. It does mean I accepted that the pressure that can be applied. I found it rather interesting, the Radisson Corporation and what they suddenly did, and they pulled their endorsements and support. And then you have Anheuser-Busch, you know, the big beer company slash, you know, pulling their, threatening to pull, well, they have pulled their $50 million a year, you know, deal with the NFL. And Nike, who, and it was interesting because Nike stood behind Tiger Woods, okay? But mm-hmm. Nike, or at least local Nike's pulling, you know, jersey number 28, which is Adrian Peterson's number. In the case of Ray Rice, his high school, you know, tore his jersey down, et cetera. Now in Adrian Peterson's hometown of, what is it, Palestine, Texas, you know, the folks there are still really behind him. And the statistics, the polls show that the nation is really divided. You know, you see polls basically 48, 46, if you will, 2 or 3% undecided. People are kind of debate, you know, are debating this and divided on it and et cetera. But at the same time, you know, I still thought that due process was an important element in the United States. But as a black man, I know that it really is not, you know, because what happened to due process? Because as Adrian Peterson gone to trial and been tried yet? Did we miss something? Were we in a time warp?
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring, you know, this contempt prior to investigation by these folks is absolutely ridiculous. I shouldn't have hit that yet. That was for something later. But yeah, I'm looking at it, Mr. Edwards. I'm going like, wait, now is the media organizing this between Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson to put Ferguson on the back burner? So, you know?
I think that they are. I've said that on one of my radio programs, that this is certain to keep our attention away from Ferguson. It definitely now is to keep attention away from the fact that, you know, folks are suggesting that young black American males and females are not loyal, patriotic, and there needs to be a return to, quote unquote, and I lived through that particular period as a young man, the 1960s, the whole COINTELPRO, J. Edgar Hoover's passion for, you know, dirty tricks and et cetera inside of the African-American, or as we were referred to back in those days, Negro community and et cetera. But I'm also a historian with regards to what happened to Japanese-Americans, or Nishi, as they refer to themselves, those who are native-born of Japanese ancestry. I mean, the Japanese, and I refer you to my column in the Spokesman Recorder, is that the Japanese did not even begin to realize how hard hit and blindsided they were as they ultimately were put in internment camps and et cetera, whereas we didn't have the same philosophy for the Italians and the Germans, who were our arch enemies in the European theater, if you will. And so I'm looking tonight at let me just say this, and by the way, the phone lines are certainly open. Adrian Peterson, to me, is a good man. I think that he definitely has been a good father. From what I understand, he certainly supports his children, and, you know, he's had some relationships, and he has children by different women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's part of it. You said something interesting, that he has been known to fraternize with Caucasian women, but, you know, they tell me that Adrian likes all women, sisters and et cetera. But I was just so disappointed in what the Vikings did to him yesterday, reinstating him, indicating he would play in the game in New Orleans, and then feeling the pressure, Radisson, Casco Oil, people, you know, things like that, capitulated, you know, and said, no, you know, we're going to pay him to stay away from the club.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure that Adrian Peterson, even though he's, and rightly so, by contract, is being compensated, I don't think he owes any updates to the Vikings, the NFL, or anybody else on what his status will be in a Texas court, because there's nothing they can do. I don't think there's anything they're committed to do with regards to that. That's going to be Adrian Peterson and his attorneys. I do like the Players Association, Mr. Allen, going to bat for Ray Rice. They have filed an appeal. They raised, I think, a good question, a legal question, and that is double jeopardy, if
mm-hmm.
you will, because he initially had been given a punishment of 2 games and et cetera. Next thing you know, pressure groups allegedly, you know, applied pressure. Roger Goodell couldn't get his story right. And by the way, though, they will not – come up with 24 NFL owners to quote unquote fire Roger Goodell. That's all a game. And you know, I see Roger went into the hospital. Maybe that's what Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson should have done. They should have been hospitalized and said they were fatigued and all of that. But I'm looking at this, and then I'm weighing this against what you just said, my colleague, Ferguson, Missouri. And, oh, by the way, on that particular note, phone lines are open, by the way.
Yes, they are.
The St. Louis County attorney did a peculiar thing yesterday, very quietly announced, and, boy, there was very little debate today, that the grand jury determination is going to be pushed all the way back to January 7th.
Mm.
And so you're talking in terms of, you know, actually a half a year for the grand jury. Now, I mean, I know the grand juries, you know, move exceedingly fine and et cetera. I mean, we have a grand jury seated over in St. Paul taking a look at recruitment for foreign fighters involving both the Somali community and the African-American community. For those of you out there that don't think you're being looked at, you don't know what's going on. But, you know, the date is pushed back now and accepted. You know, it appears that people think that we'll just kind of forget about what's going on. We had an excellent report last week from our source in Missouri and particularly in St. Louis County. There are some peculiar things that are not being talked about. And by the way, in closing, as we put the number out, I felt somewhat renewed in my trust of people when I saw two white construction workers in St. Louis County who were witnesses to the August 9th tragedy step up, and then the video that appeared. And boy, it was interesting to watch some of the media, not only Fox, Mr. Allen, but CNN and et cetera, try to justify it. Well, maybe the picture and the construction, the two, actually they were drivers who were also working on a building there. I mean, he stood there and he clearly said, I mean, the man had his arms raised in the air when you shot him. I mean, God, what, you know. And so I'm looking at that, but I got the feeling that they want our attention drawn to, you know, a switch, if you will, and a punch. Now, that no way in the world are we condoning by any shape, form, or fashion the punch in the elevator or, you know, a over, quote-unquote, physical activity which provided any kind of injuries to the child. And by the way, I thought it was rather interesting, the attempt 2 days ago by media, including Minneapolis and St. Paul media, to make it appear that Adrian Peterson had hurt a child in 2013, for another four-year-old. But that kind of collapsed when it came out that, well, first of all, there were never any charges, you know, and so what is this really all about? So anyways, the number, Mr. Allen, phone lines are open, if you will. A lot of things going on in America, a lot of things going on around the world. You got the number? All right, Mr. Allen seems to be
Sorry, someone.
Oh, you're back. Okay.
Call in.
Yeah, give the number out.
Yeah, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the phone lines are open. And, Mr. Edwards, we do have Mr. Woods holding that would like to give us an update.
Yeah, go
on
ahead. Bring Mr. Woods on.
Okay. Mr. Woods, you are live on the air. How are you, sir?
Yes, I'm okay tonight. Listen, I got a couple of comments. This Adrian Peterson, how they're really trying to castrate him. Our sociology is different from white folks, okay? My mom's beat me. I'm so glad that she did chastise me because I probably wouldn't be where I am today. And so this is another ploy, like you were saying earlier in the show, how they are trying to they put the grand jury off until January.
January 7th yeah. Now. Yes, sir.
That's ridiculous, okay? But this these tactics are happening all around the board. Even my situation, how Hennepin County can just really ignore you and do business as usual in terms of productive businesses that can help the community. Now, it's going to be a meeting tomorrow, and I'm going to be at that meeting because the whole black community is not really being represented. And so in terms of this heroin epidemic, we really need to get out.
Talk to us a little bit about that, Brother Woods. Just how bad is it?
How bad is it?
Yeah,
I'm in Richfield, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so my center's in Richfield, and right now it's to the point that we have more heroin addicts in our treatment program than we've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so one particular strategy does not mean that that's the strategy for the whole African-American community. And Hennepin County keeps putting money into these leaders that's supposed to be representing the community. I still don't know who the black leaders are in the community, so how can they speak for me? And my program is being unjustly served right today in terms of Hennepin County in 1800 doing what they want to do to a viable program. And the county commissioners, since we've been dealing with this problem, I can honestly say that they have not responded to us at all in any kind of way, and it's really white privilege. Even in terms of that board at 1800, they have not missed a beat in terms of doing what they want to do and squeezing programs out. And this is a matter that I'm not going to give up on. I'm going to continue to address this, but we don't stick together, and that's the problem with us as a community as a whole. But what they're doing is with Agent Peterson, St. Louis, and all these issues and killing black men every day, what they're saying is we really don't care. What happens, we're going to do what we want to do. But they can't, no matter what they do, they just cannot destroy us. They're putting us in jail. That's not getting rid of us. They're giving us all kind of disease. Doctors are doing whatever they want to do to blacks. We ain't dying fast enough, and we need to take advantage.
Okay, we're not dying fast enough. All right.
We ain't dying fast enough. And so that's what all this is about, and this is nationwide that this is going on. And it's really an atrocity. And the people that are supposed to be speaking up for the African-American, they're really what you call deal breakers. You know, a situation jumps off. They call these black leaders in. Instead of the black leaders saying, well, wait a minute, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this, what they do is they're deal brokers. They come in, and then they say, go home, and then election day, you vote. Meanwhile, they're killing us in every way that they can.
Mr. Allen, go right ahead.
Well, I would just like to tell Mr. Woods, during the time that you were talking, I received a text from Sheriff Rick Stanek, who said he will be sending some dates for you for a meeting coming up so that you are included in the conversation. And that text just came through, and I did supply him with your contact information. And so that just happened just like a couple seconds ago. But, you know, we're looking at this, the heroin thing. Mr. Edwards and Mr. Woods on Facebook, this poster they have up there is getting a lot of play. A lot of people are looking at it and planning to attend this event tomorrow in Plymouth. But yet, you know, they think that this heroin is being processed and grown. Poppies are grown in North Minneapolis or in Minneapolis in general. And as we all know, that's not the case.
Yeah, the poppies come from the triangle, quote unquote, in combination of Afghanistan, Myanmar, and Thailand, and et cetera. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'd just like to say something here.
Go ahead.
You know, that is so far-fetched. The poppies are grown in Thailand or wherever. I mean, Minneapolis.
Right.
North Minneapolis. That's just like saying that we are the perpetrators of racism. We don't have enough power to do that. It takes money and power to do that, and that's something that black folks don't have at this particular point in time. So how in the hell can we produce this on the north side?
Far-fetched. Right. It's part of a maligning of the African American. But I do know that we better get on top of our game. I mean, I know that you, sir, have been on top of your game for a long time, but you know, we've been hearing some interesting discussions. I'm privy to some interesting discussions and et cetera going on. And you know, our victims, quote unquote, are just as important and precious to us as any other community. And these meetings that are being called, Mr. Allen, Mr. Woods, in which we are intentionally being shut out, if you will, the African American experts, if you will, who know what the heck they're talking about and et cetera, are being shut out. They're not being invited. And, of course, Mr. Woods has been pointing out that they don't even get the referrals, you know. And so it's kind of like you have the kind of the right wing kind of saying, well, you know, those people don't even care about themselves. They don't care about what's happening to their own kind. You know, they don't speak up. I was at a meeting of 400 people. I mean, this is them talking, and there were 400 experts in there, and, you know, there weren't any black people there at all. And of course, the reason is because they are not invited, and if they do attempt to come in, they're identified as being intrusive and disrespectful and et cetera. So, but go ahead, Mr. Allen. Any other question for Brother Woods?
I got one more comment. I really have one more comment here. How can they have 400 people in a meeting and none of these people are African Americans and they can speak about what African Americans go through or what the problem is? A lot of times when you hear about shootings, two black men in a shooting, they mention that, but they don't discuss the context. You know, that brother might have been looking for a job for 2 years, or he might have got a job, and then they fired him because of a background check, and mm-hmm. this brother was really planning on taking care of his family, and then another brother bumps into him on the streets, and then this brother might not have been able to get a job, or, you know, is downtrodden in life. And so things like that happen. So they're quick to say that two black men killed each other shooting on the north side, but they don't never discuss the context of this. And so I think that, like you said earlier, Ron, that we need to step up and get our act together, because if not, we are going to be extinct. One day they will be talking about there was a black man.
Thank you.
Because they wiping us out in every way that they can. And, you know, they have these think tanks. These think tanks that's created, that's what they do, to figure out how we can wipe you out financially. Because really, they're really wiping us out, because what they're doing is they're castrating you. If you can't financially, if you're financially castrated, you can't take care of your family. And that's one thing that's important to a man, to be able to take care of his family. And they're steady coming up with ways to keep you from doing that. So they're really taking your power away. And so if you have no power, then you become powerless.
Yeah. All right, then. Brother Woods, appreciate it. Thank you, and the
Thank
best,
you.
And we'll continue
you,
to follow what's happening.
I'll put
Thank
you back in the queue there, Mr. Woods.
All right.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, let me ask you this. You would know this. Let me find it. Where did it go? Who is Ontario Smith?
Ontario Smith was a professional athlete who was stopped in an airport, if you will, and he had a device that you know you use for sexual, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got it. It's a device that you can pop up, and it makes it look like your thing is big. I mean, I hate to do this because we have children, but. Yeah, if that's the same Ontario Smith that you're mentioning, that's boy, I hadn't heard his name in a long time.
Well, someone, there's a little trend going on Facebook here. It says, according to Buster Only, O-L-N-I-Y-N-E-Y at ESPN, the Minnesota Vikings have just re-signed Ontario Smith for the remainder of the season.
Huh? Is that right? They ain't gonna find nobody to replace Adrian Peterson. Wow,
yeah.
Wow, but
yeah.
That is interesting. That's because that's who Ontario Smith was, if you will. Kind of disappeared from the American landscape, if you will. Certainly mm-hmm. disappeared from the NFL. Wow, mm-hmm. Somebody text that to us, huh? Wow. Hey, come on, guys.
Hey.
Phone lines are definitely open. Now, we're going to 9:30, Mr. Allen. What's our itinerary here?
So we have a little bit over 11 minutes here, 9:30.
Okay.
But, Mr. Edwards, one thing I need to bring up real quick, since we need to get this in, according to the National NAACP unit bylaws, notices were to go out in August to all current members in good standing and lifetime members of the NAACP to start. They were supposed to elect a nominations committee.
Now, that's August of next year? 2015?
August had just left us.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That's right. Because I remember the discussion before, quote-unquote, you were purged and some others decided to leave. That's right. The terms of those elected in December of 2013 was for approximately 1 year. Mm-hmm. Well, you're absolutely right, Mr. Allen, as one who was involved with the NAACP in some of those rancorous elections, if you will, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. You're right. In fact, the nominations committee is supposed to have been appointed or elected at this month's meeting. Is the NAACP have a meeting scheduled for this month?
Well, you know, the Minneapolis NAACP, I called the hotline and that was supposed to have that information, and I would just like to play back the message that I got.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the NAACP hotline. We got crickets, Mr. Edwards. There has been no email sent out. Well, I got to put it like this. I got to be fair, Mr. Edwards. I have as a member in good standings of the Minneapolis branch, 4 or 5, if I'm not mistaken. I have not received any notice of any meeting since.
Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Allen, because this was a big topic for us at the early part of the year, and then, you know, you and others that moved on, and I have to commend you for not attempting to destroy the organization, et cetera. But did you have a chance to vote in June for delegates to the national confab?
Oh, I didn't know that you could do that. No, I didn't hear anything about that. That was G-19 classified. You know,
the bylaws, the Constitution indicates that the delegates to the national convention are to be elected by the membership. I mean, that's part of the role you folks in the membership have, is to elect the delegates to represent you. And it's on a proportional kind of basis, if you will, based on the size of your branch, that you're current with your dues and payments and responsibilities. I thought that you and some others had gone to a meeting in June and voted for your representative. Well, there was a delegation from Minneapolis and Las Vegas.
No, there's nothing like that. Nothing like that. Hey, we have a phone call, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get it.
Let's call her.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
Real good.
You?
What's your question? How can we help you, madam?
Okay, my name is Latanza. My topic is to all the community leaders. We're doing a lot of talking about these issues out here, but we're not doing a walk.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to constantly talk about the issue, we got, guys dying every day on the streets out here. We got one young man that just got killed yesterday on, 24th and Emerson?
23rd.
23rd.
Now, let's get it correct. 23rd and Fremont, and the second one was shot 25th and Fremont. Go ahead.
Okay. And then we got a upcoming shooting, later on that night?
Young man shot in the head, and then another young man shot. Yeah, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Right. Mm-hmm. And those killings is not going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to stop. It's going to be a battlefield of war out here. And to me, doors need to be knocked on. And that's just what needs to take place. People need to get with the police station and talk with them and see how we can come together to address the issues that's going on out here. Instead of arguing with the police and getting mad with them, let's just work with them. Let's just work with them, and that's it.
Well, by the way, your comments are timely because earlier before we went on the air at 8:30, I had just left a meeting at the park board in which those st- statements were made by a number of community people. They were, you know, the purpose of the meeting was to take a look at recruitment and hiring in the Minneapolis Police Department, which is pretty low. But people made exactly the same kind of statements that you're making about, you know, what expectations should be. So your comments, very timely, very timely.
Okay. Well, I just think doors need to be knocked on, and that's just how it's going to have to go. Doors have to get knocked on,
no matter how
we look at it.
All right. Thank you, madam. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Get a number again, Mr. Allen, unless we got somebody else waiting. You know, those lines are open. You know, we interviewed the current incumbent sheriff, Richard Stanek. We talked about Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, got into some kind of other discussions. We talked once again about Ferguson and et cetera. We've got about what, Mr. Allen, about 9 minutes left. But, I mean, these phone lines are open for those out there that have some opinions and need to express them. I just kind of thought there would be a little bit more passion because there is such a division with regards to the Adrian Peterson situation, more so than Ray Rice. I think that young man understood that he really overstepped the line, though contrary to what the NFL said, that video had been shown on TMZ in the first week in March. And I know this because I watched it twice on two consecutive nights, and I was like, oh, wow, okay, it's really too bad the young brother did that, you know, going to be consequences. And, of course, there were. He was initially suspended for 2 games. Now he's through for life, and I have to raise the question, though the NFL Players Association is grieving his situation. I think at some point they're going to make a determination if they're going to grieve Adrian Peterson. I don't think that Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice are going to be let back in the league. What do you think about that, Don?
I'm just looking at it from a distance because I don't know the effect with or without them because, like you said, I don't follow sports, or like I said, I don't follow, you know, don't even watch the Vikings play. I used to, Mr. Edwards, when I watched them, they lost, so I just stopped altogether. So, any team, even the NBA Finals, whatever team I like, they lost. So I just, I'm done with sports.
Okay.
This is when I was 17. But
you would be a good gambler then. You would be.
No, I would.
You would be a good gambler.
No.
Okay.
So I
all
everything.
Right.
And so, I'm just, you know, I keep following it and I keep seeing all this stuff. And I appreciate people like Charles Barkley coming to the defense of Adrian Peterson and just speaking his mind. But I also look at the chat rooms here for WCCO, Fox 9 News, and I just look at all the hate and the blatant white privilege and racism that we see on this topic. And to the young lady that just called here, you know, we talk about it on this radio station because we're staying in our lane. This is our lane. We bring news and information.
Oh, yeah. We know our place.
Yeah, we know our place. And there are people out there that say they address this or whatnot. And you know as well as we know that something is not connecting somewhere that needs to be connected. And so I just say get involved the best you can and stay sucker free. So
let me raise this question because we've been talking about them and we've got about a couple minutes. Is there some reason, given the Adrian Peterson situation, that we haven't heard anything from our civil rights organization? I mean, is the NAACP's of both cities and the Urban League of Minneapolis, because they don't have an Urban League in St. Paul anymore, should it be troubling to us that they have not said anything about the level of racism that has been attached to the call for Adrian Peterson's head and to a lesser degree Ray Rice over in Baltimore? I mean, or maybe I missed it. Maybe the NAACP and the Urban League had a press conference or something and talked
to them? Oh, no.
See, the issue of due process is so important to our listening audience that we need to understand. See, due process has not been accorded to Mr. Peterson, and, you know, we're getting ready to send American service men and women back over to fight in the Middle East, if you will, for democracy. And I was just kind of wondering, you know, when Mr. Peterson and Mr. Rice were going to get, you know, some semblance of due process. I mean, I used to believe and was made to understand that the doctrine here in the United States is that one is innocent until proven guilty. But it's kind of the reverse, isn't it, Don?
Yeah, absolutely, Mr. Ehrlich, absolutely. And the strange thing is, you know, you talk about the troops going over to fight for democracy, but they're going over there with bad intel. So
once again, all right, Mr. Allen. Well, it's been an excellent program. We're coming in. I've got into just enough time. Let my man James Brown take us home.
He's getting ready to right now.